All right, let's go from building repairs to the Abbey to science and a most amazing connection between endangered frogs, IVF, and pregnancy testing. There's a fantastic story to be told here about all of this connection, and that IVF is helping endangered frogs hopefully come back from the brink. But there's an amazing history, courtesy of Dr. Amy Siller from the School of Biological Sciences at the University of Wollongong, who's in our studio. Hello, Amy. How are you going?
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Tell me the history, first of all, the pregnancy testing and imported frogs.
Yes, okay. Well, back in the 1930s and all the way through to the 1960s, if you wanted to know whether you were pregnant, a human female would get a sample of urine and they would send it to a diagnostic lab who would take that urine and inject it into a frog. And if the frog gave eggs, then that was a positive pregnancy test.
How did they find this out in the first place?
That's a good question.
We're just going to inject some lady's urine into a frog and see what happens.
Science was a little bit different back then, I suppose, and it was very experimental. And they actually did start out with other animal models, but then they moved on to frogs because it was a much more reliable test using frogs. And the main species they used was Xenopus laevis, which is an African clawed frog. And so this species from Africa was exported all over the world globally for diagnostic labs.
So we had labs all around the world with frogs in them, and they're testing urine from potentially pregnant women.
Exactly. Yes, that's how they did it back then. But science moved on, and from the 1960s onwards, we had far better diagnostic labs that didn't require animal models.
I'm just staggered. I mean, it's so easy now. You walk into Woolies and you pick up a testing kit.
Yeah, very different.
Imagine
nowadays.
Going to a chemist back then and they hand you a frog. So these frogs get exported all around the world, including into Australia.
That's
did
right.
They make their way into our native frog population somehow?
Well, the frogs, we believe, they were brought into Australia and other places in the world. We do know that in some parts of the states that the actual frogs themselves were released once they weren't needed anymore. Here in Australia, we don't have any of those frogs that were released into our wild habitats, thankfully. Mm. But the frogs did bring with them a disease which is known as the chytrid fungus, and it's a disease which is impacting frogs all over the world. And the disease can be in water, and so we believe in Australia that's most likely how it got into our systems, was through the water from the diagnostic labs being released.
Wow.
And that was the initial spread, but then obviously once it's in the system, the frogs, our native frogs, will then pass it on to each other, and some species are more resilient than others. But unfortunately, globally, this chytrid fungus has led to the decline of many species, and we know at least 500 species worldwide have just crashed because of this fungus.
Right, so the frogs didn't get out and survive, unlike the cane toads, but the fungus did.
Mm-hmm.
So that leads to a decline in our native population in things like the corroboree frog, and then, you know, almost a full circle movement, you're using fertility technology to try and bring them back from the brink. Tell me about that work.
Exactly. Well, so we have a lot of endangered species in Australia, and we have some fabulous zoos which are doing some really amazing things for conservation. And so we do have a lot of our endangered and threatened species that are in captivity that they've rescued. We've brought in some new species too that weren't necessarily in decline because of the chytrid fungus, but because of the recent bushfires and things like that that have impacted them, they've been rescued and brought into captivity where they are part of breeding programs. But frogs actually have a spectacular reproductive diversity. So our frogs breed in so many different ways. Most people think of frogs and think of them breeding in ponds, but there are so many different ways that they breed. There are species that create foam nests that hang off tree branches, and the tadpoles will hatch and fall into ponds below. There are other species that will make terrestrial burrows, and so they lay their eggs just in dry little hollows underneath the ground, and then when winter rains come, they might flood those burrows, and that's what triggers the tadpoles to hatch. There are other species that don't actually have tadpoles that live in water at all. They will have the eggs hatch, and the tadpole hatches and just swims around in the jelly from the egg until it turns into a little frog and hops away.
And there's ones that are on the mother's back.
Absolutely,
and the ones in the mother's mouth.
And there are ones that the dads have little pouches that the tadpoles will be carried around in until they turn into froglets. So their reproductive diversity is just absolutely spectacular. But what that means is that they all require really different things. And so the environmental cues that are needed for them to breed in captivity can be very specific and sometimes hard to replicate. So there's two main reasons that we would use reproductive technologies. One is just if they're not breeding properly in captivity, we give them that little bit of a helping hand, a bit more of an incentive by using some hormone injections, and then we leave them to it after that. But then the other reason which I'm particularly interested in is for genetic management. So even if we have frogs that are breeding well in captivity, we might still want to use reproductive technologies to increase their genetic diversity. So we would do that through IVF and also through biobanking. So the main thing that I do is actually work out the hormone therapies and what hormones to use to be able to collect good quality gametes, and in particular sperm samples. And then those sperm samples, we're actually freezing them and putting them in the freezer so that we've got them long term. And then if the genetic diversity of those endangered species declines over time, what we can do is thaw out that sperm, and we can reinvigorate the genetic diversity into the current population by using it in IVF.
Mm. But much like the breeding cycles are so different, the eggs are different as well. I was reading also that you can freeze sperm really easily, but unlike human eggs, most frog eggs are huge, and the yolk is so big that you can't freeze them.
That's right. That's absolutely right. So a human egg you can't see just by looking at it without a microscope. They're very, very small. But frog eggs... you've probably seen frog eggs in ponds and things when you were a kid. They're big enough that we can see them. So there is a bit of difference in size, but the biggest...
So why does that make a difference in the freezing process?
Because of the yolk volume, basically. So when you've got a higher volume of yolk, then it's at more risk of freeze damage. So you get icicles that will occur in the yolk, and unfortunately we just can't freeze them and thaw them out and have them still healthy and viable. They are damaged during the process, whereas the sperm are a lot smaller and we can get pretty good success freezing and thawing the sperm. So we do have to use fresh eggs at the moment. But that said, the technologies are advancing so quickly, and there are people that are working with freezing just ovarian cells rather than the actual eggs themselves, so that we've got those banked and cell lines that... who knows what the future holds, whether we can use those to produce little frog babies from.
I don't even know whether I should ask you about how you get sperm out of a frog.
Well, it's relatively simple. So the nice thing with frogs is that the IVF occurs out of the body, so we don't have to fertilise them and put them back inside the mother. So once we get the eggs and sperm out, then we can do the IVF very simply. To get the sperm and eggs with the males, with the sperm, so they basically just have one exit hole that their sperm and their urine and everything is released from, and so they will release the urine and the sperm gets flushed out with it. So we just have a nice little glass tube that we fire polish so it's smooth and we don't hurt them. And with a little bit of a tickle, I suppose, with the glass rod, the frog will be stimulated to wee, and we get the sperm out at the same time.
did you ever think you would be... you would be tickling frogs when you took on a career as a scientist, Amy?
No, I can't say that I did imagine that, no.
Well, I'm sure on behalf of the Corroboree frog population, we're very glad you've turned out to be a frog tickler. It's been so fantastic reading it. Frogs are just an endlessly fascinating subject, aren't they?
They are,
there's
absolutely.
So much diversity.
Yes, definitely. I mean, our endangered species, our wildlife are so unique and so special and worth preserving. But, yeah, frogs in particular are just so unique and so varied that we really do need to safeguard them for the future generations.
Right. Lovely to have you come in. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Amy Siller, University of Wollongong. Talking frogs with us, and you can read more about her on a lovely story in UOW's The Stand online magazine.